If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show. Will Gavin, Ollie Hunter, reunited and it feels so good. And reunited with the Gridiron Show, a Hall of Famer, bona fide Super Bowl champion, Jerry Rice speaks to Will Gavin. We'll also head into the Cowboys locker room. We'll look at some of the key decisions and intrigues from week 11 of the NFL. And there's all a whole load of other stuff as well. This is the Gridiron Show. Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show. Ollie Hunter in the studio, Will Gavin probably in his pants. He's got a lot of cats all over him, that I can vouch for. How are you, Willie?
I am covered in cats, although actually one of them's buggered off now. It's just what I'm left with, one cat. But no, I'm fully dressed because it's far too cold to be just sat around in my pants. But and also we've got a friend staying at the moment. I was, as you are well aware, Ollie, at a wedding this past weekend, which means my knowledge of week 11 is somewhat limited. And we're also doing this podcast a little bit later in the week, so we figured we should just touch on some of the big storylines. And I've watched back three or four of the games that I thought that I'd kind of been recommended to watch based on intrigue and storylines. So we're going to touch on those. But yeah, because we've got a friend staying for the wedding, it's also not really acceptable to be strutting around in your pants while you've got company.
No, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. I'm surprised, actually, though.
I'm not saying I haven't done it. I'm just saying it's not socially acceptable.
Which is it?
Famously, not someone who conforms to social norms, unfortunately.
No. How was the wedding? Was it good?
The wedding was absolutely phenomenal. I know that Adam listens to the show, actually. The groom of the wedding, Adam and Talisa, who are just the best. And it was probably the best wedding I've been to at which I wasn't getting married.
It was
really interesting because Talisa is she's half Indian, half Australian.
Oh yeah, mate.
She is moving over. Yeah, perfect. She's moving over from India. As she's got a large Indian family, and then you've got Adam, who is from Yorkshire, and just as normative as possible. And it was a real it was really interesting because it was kind of a kind of culture clash. You know, the dance floor had everything from power ballads to Bollywood, and it was, and like the food all had that little bit of to it as well. And it was just, it all came together beautifully, and it was a brilliant ceremony, and the speeches were really good, and the booze was all free. And yeah, it was messy.
I gave him a shout out on TalkSport 2, but I was confused as to why he was wearing a kilt when he's from Yorkshire.
His dad's Scottish. He is half Scottish. His dad's Scottish, his mum's Polish, and he's from Yorkshire. So it was a real diverse culture of people. I got the taxi driver to put you on in the taxi back from the venue to our hotel when we finally left at about 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I fell asleep before I actually heard you. I heard a little bit of the commentary and then nodded off in the cab.
Because buddy,
it's me. So I'm sorry, mate. I tried to support you.
Do you know what? I had a really good time doing it. It's quite difficult because you don't have much time to just chat and talk and really go into it, because before you've started to compose what you've said or recapped what's happened, you've got to go back. But it was really good fun. It was interesting as well, given the Mitch Trubisky benching / injury thing. I don't think he was injured. I suppose we should do this now.
Little teaser for our conversation coming up, or are we banging straight into this?
I don't know. I reckon maybe it feels natural. He was dreadful. Jared Goff aside from maybe a couple of drives, wasn't much better. Both defences played really well. But Trubisky, I mean, we've been banging this drum ever since he came out of college. He's not an NFL quarterback, and he's just not with, what was it, 17-7, 3.5 minutes to go. Chase Daniels comes in. You didn't get to see on the coverage the conversation until about, I think, until that drive had ended. But there was a long conversation between Matt Nagy and Mitch Trubisky when Matt Nagy puts his play book or play sheet, you know, the laminated play sheet by their head, so you can't see what's going on. You just see Trubisky nodding from the other side. He looked gutted. He didn't look injured. At no point did he look like he had a hip injury. So it was a very, very weird decision. The commentators, Tom Thompson and Rod Woodson, or Charles Woodson, one or the other, they were perplexed and dumbfounded as well. They couldn't understand. Well, I mean, you could understand why he got benched, because he wasn't good. But that when the news came out that it was an injury, they questioned that. They queried that. Just for a bloke who got drafted after Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, sorry, before Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, what a fall from grace.
100%. It was, look, the thing is, watching it back with the kind of hindsight of knowing everything that's been said since, I watched the two drives before that, and we're talking about an offense who are in absolute free fall anyway. You know, only 14.3 points per game, only just north of 260 total yards, 166 passing yards a game, 1-for-4 on third down as well as an average for the season, basically, which is, you know, as much as you know that I'm not a Trubisky fan, and we've talked about that since almost day one, Matt Nagy has to take some stick for that as well. And his play calling has come into question this week. He said he's not going to be giving it up. But for a guy who designs a good offense, he doesn't seem to call a good offense, which is a very different skill. It is genuinely, you can design really good plays, but if you call the wrong plays in the wrong moment, then it's not going to work for you. And I think we saw that from, say, for example, the Rams in the Super Bowl. You know, that offense was obviously brilliant all year and was a really well-designed offense. But the Patriots reacted to it with 2 weeks of build to get to there, and they didn't know how to react off the back. And that comes down to play calling. I don't think that comes down to bad offensive design. But you're absolutely right. I didn't see anything that suggested, and Nagy claimed that it happened two drives earlier. I didn't see anything that suggested that his hip was hurting before that, that he was struggling on and off the field, that there was any difference in his throws. They were still, you know, high and overthrown most of the time, trying to force the ball into windows that didn't exist. Just the same rubbish. And I just, there are people out there who are convinced that this guy is still can be an NFL quarterback with a change of, whether it's a change of scenery, a change of coaching, with an opportunity for some time away, rebuild his confidence, whatever it is. I'm not convinced of that at all. And maybe there was an NFL potential quarterback coming out of college, but he has been put in such a situation in Chicago between the offensive line issues they've had, the lack of running game, which has been as much about, again, play calling it as it's been about talent, between some receiver issues, you know, the lack of tight end when Trey Burton went down, and then his kind of disappearance seemingly since he came back from injury. He has been put in a horrendous situation. It's reminiscent of David Carr in Houston when he first came out of college. you know, the guy's clearly a smart bloke, but I would be amazed if he gets an NFL renaissance, particularly considering he's either going to be looking for a new team right now, or they're going to, you know, keep him on but find a bridge guy while he learns. And as we've talked about a lot on this show, this is a summer where there's going to be a huge number of quarterbacks available. And that's even with the guy who was expected to go number one in the draft. Having come through successful hip surgery from that dislocation this week, the big question mark over whether or not he's now even going to be a top 10 pick, let alone the number one overall pick. I still think that there is a lot of people who will look at it. Honestly, I would say top five and still even a good chance of him going number one overall to her. even after the injury. I know it was a serious injury. I know it comes off the back of two ankle injuries, but I think you just look at the 3 years he's been there and you go, oh, there's enough for us to invest that. Plus the Dolphins in particular have got so many draft picks at this point that if it ends up not working, you just take another quarterback next year. Just keep taking shots at it. So I just think Matt Nagy might be out of the league. He might be out of the league as well, but certainly Mitchell Trubisky. I think what ends up happening is he probably turns into the backup in Chicago. And if he gets a shot next year because of injury or because of poor play or whatever, then that's when he's got to take his chance. But I don't see him starting for a team week one next season.
And what is it? His contract is up for renewal. His rookie contract finishes at the end of next year, so they're going to have to pay him anyway. So make him the quarterback, and then if they want to keep him around because he knows the system, knows the club as the number two, he has to accept a lower contract. I thought there was a couple of other weird things from the game. I think
just to say on that as well, don't forget about the fifth year option, which they can add on, which admittedly is going to be more than he's been being paid already. But say they see six good games out of him, they can whack the fifth-year option on and keep him around for still the price of an average backup, and still then get rid of him after 5 years without too much, you know, financial concern.
Yeah, exactly, absolutely. Look, there was a stat that flashed up in the mid fourth quarter where Khalil Mack had been on the field for just four passing downs. And in those four passing downs, he had zero QB pressures. He was then taken out of the game for the final point scoring drive from the LA Rams. That's when when Goff started slinging it. There's something weird going on there. And I think you have to give props to Sean McVay, who probably was waiting out Khalil Mack being taken out of the game, either by rest or design or who knows what, and then capitalised on that. So I think actually Sean McVay called an okay game. Todd Gurley was the best player in the first half, and it looks like he may be back to not near his best, but on the way back. So encouraging for the Rams, very, very disappointing. Yes, I'm rubbing my hands with glee for the Bears.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to look at the upcoming Rams games where you have the Ravens, who just put an absolute hurting on the Texans this week. You have the Cardinals after that, who have restricted a 49ers team who previously were running for 180 yards a game to like 70, 75 yards a game, two separate occasions. So their run defense isn't bad at all. Then the Seahawks, then the Cowboys, who we're going to talk about their defense dropping off somewhat, but still have a lot of talent there. I don't know, like, this might be for me a flash in the pan moment for Todd Gurley, but if he is healthy and looking good and can really start to be the focal point of that offense again down the stretch, maybe they get healthy and maybe they start putting a hurt in on some of these teams.
And he has to get healthy. Well, he has to be the focal point because they're not healthy on wide receiver when their fourth guy is now their number two in Josh Reynolds because of various injuries to the wide receiving core. They've struggled to find their tight ends. The two tight ends who are much vaunted barely had a look in the game on Sunday as well. So there are still issues, but you're right. If they can address those, they're a dangerous team. Aaron Donald was phenomenal again. They're a dangerous team.
Let's talk about, we need to talk about the 49ers because we're going to have Jerry Rice coming up. We're also going to have Sean Lee coming up on the NFC side of things. But just one of the storyline that I think is really interesting from this past weekend. We've just mentioned Lamar Jackson and the absolute hurting that the Ravens put on the Texans. And realistically, not just the kind of hurting offensively, because it was another performance from Lamar Jackson, which solidifies his MVP. And just to be clear on this, people who... And I have obviously been on that Seahawks Russell Wilson bandwagon all season, and there's the very good argument that you can say MVP means most valuable player, yada, 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 meh, whatever. But Lamar Jackson has statement wins over the Texans and Deshaun Watson, over the Seahawks and Russell Wilson, and over the New England Patriots in the last 4 weeks. They have gone from a 4-2 team who were maybe lacking a little bit of identity on defense and didn't really know where they were going, to suddenly being a team who are, with those four wins on the bounce, I think now the favourites for the number one seed. Now, they still have a couple of difficult games coming up. They've still got to play the 49ers. They've still got to play the Rams. They've still got to play the Bills on the road, which is always tough to go to Buffalo in kind of late November, early December. But I look at the New England Patriots. They've got the tiebreak over the New England Patriots from the win. The defense is obviously still playing brilliantly. And the Eagles offense was a shambles in game on Sunday night. They sit at the top of the AFC. They're 9-1. There's nothing to worry about on that. But the offense, to call it underwhelming, would be a massive understatement. The Patriots are averaging just 2 points per drive, which is the fifth lowest in the franchise since Bill Belichick took over in 2000. They're ranked 25th in the red zone. They're ranked 21st with goal-to-go situations. Tom Brady appears to be ridiculously the heart of the problems. This past weekend, 26 of 47 for 216 yards and no touchdowns. It's the first time in Brady's 20-year career he played a game and didn't lead the team in touchdown passes because of Julian Edelman throwing one at the end of the game. I don't think this is a one-game clunker. I don't think this is a one-off. This has been the gradual decline that our friend Dan Hanzers over on the Around the NFL podcast has talked about over the years. But it's the gradual decline has suddenly come stark and come bare. And they're going to need that defense to continue to play at the ridiculously high level. I'm not ready to buy into the idea, particularly when they've got Cowboys, Chiefs and Texans up over the next three games. I really don't buy into the idea that this is just the Patriots get right late in the season. They figure things out. They eventually get there because we're at week 12 now and that offense still looks dross. And I just think that between those three really good teams coming up, which one loss there could be the difference between the first and second seed. Two losses could see them out of the bye entirely. No home field advantage, an offense underplaying. And despite having a historical defense, I just don't see if they had to face three or four good teams in the playoffs, I can't see just one of them not scoring enough points to outdo that offense.
Yeah, and if you look at the next three games, that is where we're going to really learn a lot more about the Patriots because, yeah, you said the defense is outstanding, but when you need a trick play from Julian Edelman to Philip Dorsett, by the way, went out of the game after taking a big hit catching that ball. We'll see what his status will be like throughout the week and we'll check in during our preview show. But they've got the Cowboys this weekend, then Sunday night football the week after against Houston in Houston. Cowboys is in Foxborough. Then they host the Chiefs after that in Foxborough. So the next three games, they could conceivably lose all three / win all three. I mean, whatever, you know. But they're down on wide receivers, with potentially Dorsett being out. N'Keal Harry came in, but I didn't see anything from him when he came in. I don't think he was even thrown to. So there are serious, serious issues on offense. They can't get James White the ball. Sonny Michel has looked a shadow of himself. So there are issues. There are absolute issues there. But defense, it's that old adage, and you hear it probably on every single podcast, defense wins you championships. If the defense can hold up, and if they haven't peaked too soon, i.e. now on defense, then they'll be okay. But, I think you're right.
And look, there are a couple of things to mention. You mentioned N'Keal Harry coming back and potentially playing a big role, and they need another weapon out there. The draft pick they've paid for Mo Sanu is looking more and more baffling by the moment. Isaiah Wynn coming back this next week could be absolutely huge for them. He's apparently been practicing already, can now come off IR on the old boomerang, is ready to go. So if that really solves some offensive line problems, because he saw a lot of pressure this past weekend, Tom Brady, then maybe that's the difference. And actually, I just remembered what I wanted to say about the Rams game. The other thing is, and you will have been listening to, I guess, the Westwood One commentary, so I don't know how much they spoke about this, but Chris Collinsworth with the Rams offensive line, they basically changed four of the five positions on the offensive line for that game this weekend. And it seemed to make a legitimate difference. They came off a bye week and they went, right, we're going to move. I think they moved Blythe from guard into centre. They put Bobby Evans in, the rookie. They brought in Austin Corbett. Like they changed the whole setup of the everywhere bar Andrew Whitworth, the left tackle. And it worked. So maybe for the Rams, that's a big thing that's going to solve it for them. And maybe for the Patriots, offensive line change will mean that, you know, Tom Brady's going to have enough time to get himself back on track. So as much as I want to celebrate the potential demise of Tom Brady, don't be shocked if he ends up pulling it out and just being, you know, classic Patriots.
Listen, they go up against the Cowboys this weekend. Robert Quinn, 8.5 sacks. DeMarcus Lawrence, 4.5 sacks. That's one guy who's in form and has got previous, another guy who's waiting to kick into form in DeMarcus Lawrence. I think that is going to be a fascinating matchup. Maybe you say tweet offensive line going up against that Cowboys pass rush.
It was a good game for their pass rush this past weekend. Michael Bennett, 2 sacks. Quinn with a sack as well. But against, you know, a Jeff Driskel Lions team who still managed to put 27 points on them, despite the fact that they didn't have their starting quarterback. They had Bo Scarborough in at running back. You know, Jeff Driskel running himself 8 for 51 and a touchdown. So it was very kind of, you know, nobody went over 47 yards in the receiving game. So it wasn't like a barn-burning offensive performance from the Lions. But it's interesting with the Cowboys. We were just talking about the Eagles against the Patriots. The Cowboys get this win. I still maintain, even with what that now does to the NFC East in terms of standings and gives the Cowboys that one-game advantage, that the Eagles run down the stretch. That was their tough game left on the schedule, essentially. If they can now get their offense right over the coming weeks when they're playing, let's be honest, a bunch of, you know, Dolphins, Giants. Oh, no, they've got the Seahawks first. Dang it. Could they lose that one? They've got to beat the Cowboys, essentially. But they've still got the Dolphins, Washington, and the Giants twice. So, I don't know, maybe I still think they'll win the NFC East. I'm not as convinced as I was the other day, but I'm still feeling it a little bit.
It throws up the NFC East, a division that we malign for having all of the primetime games and it being sometimes a little bit boring. It looks like down the stretch it's going to be a really interesting two-headed race to try and see who's going to make it into the playoffs. Really interesting. So it makes a division that normally we're a bit tired of a little bit more exciting.
Right, let's turn our attention to... Well, no, we've got the Cowboys. Should we hear from Sean Lee?
Yeah.
While we're just mentioning it. Matt Sherry caught up with Sean Lee, the kind of, I think, Hall of Fame linebacker, a future Hall of Famer of the Dallas Cowboys, a brilliant leader in the middle there, and a man who's stepped back, really, to allow Jalen Smith and Leighton Van Der Esch to come through and do their thing, but still continues to be a leader, still continues to come in and make some impact on rotation. And so Sherry spoke to him about, you know, what it's like. What is life like as a Dallas Cowboy?
Here in the victorious Dallas Cowboys locker room with veteran linebacker Sean Lee. First of all, a philosophical question. What's it like to play for the, you know, America's team, the Dallas Cowboys? Does that bring an extra weight of expectation?
Absolutely. I mean, the tradition that's been built here with the championships, the great players that have played here, that's something that we love and that's very special and that we embrace. And we know every time we step on the field, we got to represent ourselves a certain way, and we have that history on our mind.
You've been a heartbeat of this team for a number of years now, and it's been, you mentioned the championships, but it has been nearly 3 decades since the last one. Does that in itself bring a weight of expectation? And how keen are you to see, you know, they're the most famous sports franchise in the world but haven't won a lot recently?
No question. There's a sense of urgency that, hey, we need to get back to where we want to be, and it takes a certain type of work. It takes guys coming together and getting wins like this, close games that are tough. You have to do that, and that's a good step for us today.
This team that they have right now, I mean, we were chatting, the roster's loaded, isn't it, both on offense and defense. Is this the most talented squad that you've been a part of?
You know, there's no question, we do have a lot of talent, but when you play a team, every team, they're loaded with talent. And the margin for error between these teams is very small, so you have to be extremely disciplined. You have to be able to outwork a team. You have to do it intra-week in practice and make sure you're ready for every single situation, because you know you're playing against great players on the other side of the ball.
Your role now is an interesting one for so long, Matt Harpy, as the middle linebacker. But are you as much a mentor to these young guys around you? And I guess you feed off their energy a little bit as well.
No question. I mean, I got a lot of older guys who passed down how to play, how to work the right way to me, and now it's my responsibility to pass it to these young guys. They love football. They work extremely hard. And you're right. They bring a lot of energy, something I feed off of as an older guy.
4 days like no other. A festival like no other. For a bookmaker like no other. Betfred. Get up to £40 in free bets when you sign up using promo code CHELP40 and stake £10 on any Cheltenham race. Betfred. At the heart of Cheltenham. 18 plus. New UK customers only. Available from March 6 to March 13. £30 free bets credited within 10 hours of first bet settlement. Extra £10 free bets credited if first bet loses. Full terms at betfred.com/promotions. Keep it fun. BeGambleAware.org.
Hazel Irvin here at Spencer Park in Coventry, where 37-year-old Emily and her mates are taking part in a fancy dress fun run to fundraise for Sport Relief. And that means I've been lumbered with her dog, Tilly. Oh, Tilly, not over there. And they're off. An impressive array of costumes on show today. Everything from penguins to pirates, all taking on poverty and injustice. Respect. Spectacular. Poverty getting crushed by Katie on a space hopper. Easy. Coming into the final stretch now, and it's neck and neck. I think we're in for a photo finish here. But it's Suzanne smashing through injustice. She is our winner. Hey, Tilly, get off my tutu. Tilly, sit. You can help change the world too. Just order your free fundraising pack at sportrelief.com. Sport Relief. It's game on. This message was brought to you by Acast.
Sean Lee, Matt Sherry, what a pairing. Ollie, what a pairing.
It's glorious. Head to @gridiron on Twitter to have a look at that interview. Sherry looking resplendent. They loved Ford Field, by the way. Is it Ford Field? It is Ford Field. Yeah. Yeah, they loved Ford Field as a venue. It's just a pity that the city isn't great and therefore probably not necessarily suited to have a Super Bowl. Despite it being, you know, a dome stadium, but yeah, they loved the stadium. They really enjoyed the game as well. So pretty pleased for the touchdown trip, guys. After I think 3 or 4 games in the freezing cold, one of which Connor was telling me was -9. The fact that they managed to get to watch a game in their jumpers rather than woolly hats, thermals, big coats, and snow pants and stuff.
Still to come, we'll do our quick recap of the weekend action. Just any other thoughts we've had, including an impressive performance from Kirk Cousins. We'll preview Thursday night football, Colts, Texans, and we'll talk about the 49ers, because yesterday I got to go to the launch of the new NFL Academy gym. It's part of the NFL Academy we've discussed the launch of previously, and one of the ambassadors, and really, as much as, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, OBJ, there's some exciting names out there. Jerry Rice, the GOATs.
It's Jerry.
The man who... Yeah, absolutely. The man who, when you look at all-time receiving yards, a list where, yes, you've still got Larry Fitzgerald playing and seemingly, you know, a man who is almost as never-ending in his career as Jerry Rice was, still sits second on the list with around 16,800, and Jerry Rice has 22,900 receiving yards. He leads the NFL all time in receptions, in touchdowns. He's got, you know, 4 Super Bowls to his name. He's an absolute bona fide legend in the Bay Area and in the whole of the NFL. And I got a chance to catch up with him at the NFL Academy launch event, where we kicked things off. As I approached him to start chatting, we talked beards.
Jerry, yeah. Hi, how you doing?
Well, yeah, I'm doing great, man.
Good to see you, man. Yeah, very well. Thank you very well indeed.
I had to let the beard go, man.
Oh, well, it's disappointing. I thought we could have rocked the beard together. You know, it would have been a strong look.
No, I love my beard, though. I really did. But, you know, my manager was like, you know what? You know, we got a lot of endorsements, things that we got to do and stuff like that. So you're going to have to let the beard go.
So she's saying the beard isn't something worth selling.
It looks cool on you, though. I like that.
Jerry Rice, I'm a 49ers fan, and you've just made my absolute life, so thank you very much. Right, shall we? Are we in shot? Is everything good? TalkSport here at the launch of the NFL Academy gym, and delighted to say that we're joined by Hall of Fame wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers and the Oakland Raiders. We don't like to mention that part of the career. Jerry Rice, Jerry, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. It's great being here to launch the NFL Academy, and and having the players up there, you know, just looking at them. And I remember when I was one of those players. So, you know, just having the opportunity to be here and be a part of this. And, you know, what the NFL is trying to do, we're trying to expand. We're trying to teach this great game. And I realized that a lot of the players here, you know, they play other sports and stuff like that. And they just now getting their feet work. Well, their feet wet, you know, learning about professional football and just football in general. But, you know, I'm looking forward to just that interaction with the kids.
I mean, you're a guy who didn't take the most normal route to the NFL. You weren't a top prospect. You weren't at one of the kind of big college schools. So seeing guys like this, what advice would you give to them coming through a bit of a different route?
You know, I think just that, you know, the sky's the limit. Dream. You never know what is planned for you. Because, you know, I came out of B.L. Moore High School, a very small school. Then I went on to college to a Mississippi Valley State University. Then I get drafted to the NFL. And it's like a dream come true for me. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, some of those guys that are that were standing here, that's going to be out on that football field, you know, live the dream. It can happen.
I've got to ask, we've got the Packers 49ers game this weekend live on our channel. And obviously, I've got to ask you what you think of the 49ers so far this season.
I think the 49ers are doing pretty good. But, you know, I don't feel like this team is going to get complacent. I don't feel like they have arrived. There are still things that they need to correct and get better at. So, you know, I think they're going to do that. And I think they have that swagger and that standard. So, big night, Packers, and you know Aaron Rodgers. You got Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers, he does not like the 49ers because they passed on him. And every time he gets the opportunity to try to rub it in their face, he's going to do that. So it's going to be a great challenge.
We've gone and beat them in their house a couple of times in the playoffs. So, you know what, Jerry, I'm feeling confident about this weekend. What about Jimmy G? Because we saw this past weekend over 400 yards, 3 touchdowns. But I thought most importantly, a game-winning drive. And he was maybe the question mark for a lot of people. So what have you seen from him this season in terms of his growth?
Yeah, I think what's happening with Jimmy G is, you know, we lost him last year to the ACL tear. Now he's starting to get comfortable back on the football field. He's still, you know, forcing the ball just a little bit because during that game, even though he threw for over 400 yards, he still had 2 interceptions. But on that final drive, with pressure coming at him, you know, for him to stand in the pocket, deliver the football for that winning touchdown, you know, it doesn't get any better than that.
And I want to ask as well about Kyle Shanahan, because you worked under one of the great offensive minds of all time in Bill Walsh, someone who invented a system which still 3/4 of the NFL are using a version of. What do you see from Shanahan when you compare him to Bill Walsh of what he does to make sure that guys can get open and make it easier for Garoppolo?
Kyle Shanahan, great play caller. I mean, he's going to put his players in a position where they can win. And then it's just going to be up to those players. So, you know, they have built a standard. It's back now. The crowd is excited. Now, I think this past ball game, there was over like 70,000 people. And it's just like getting to like almost like the old 49ers again. So him and Kyle, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, they have done a fantastic job of bringing that standard back.
Well, I mean, you look like you could still go at 57. So we're here in a gym. You can probably show these guys a thing or two at this point. So, you know, it's a ball of
games. I'm going to be on the field with these guys at the NFL Academy today. I'm going to be out there running routes. I'm not going to just be standing around. So they better, you know, bring my football shoes out or something, man. I'm ready to go.
Brilliant, Jerry. Thank you so much for your time and enjoy the rest of today.
Yeah, I got to get that beard back, though, man.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. You know.
All right. Okay.
Jerry. Real pleasure. Thank you, man.
Jerry Rice at the NFL Academy launch, talking beards, talking football. I honestly, life moment made, Ollie Hunter. We've met Jerry Rice a couple of times before. And in fact, when I interviewed him briefly at Super Bowl 50, he was sporting the beard at that point.
Yeah.
But to get a compliment from Jerry Rice on the beard was a wonderful moment.
Might as well retire, pal. Just give it up. This is your last season. Done. There you go.
Cats, I'm going to plan, so you're going to see a lot more of me. I've actually swapped cats now, ridiculously. Right, so what I would say about Jerry Rice himself first, before we get onto his comments about the 49ers, I caught up with his agent, the lovely Sasha, who we've worked with quite a few times before, and she's always absolutely brilliant. But while he was still doing a few more of the interviews, I chatted to her for 10 or 15 minutes and just had a bit of a life catch-up, really. Oh. But she was talking about how humble he was. And about 2 weeks ago, he was voted by USA Today, the number one player of all time in their 100-year history of the NFL look back. Now, when the current NFL list comes down to it with players, I think there'll be a few quarterbacks ahead of him, Tom Brady, maybe even Joe Montana, and they have had a previous list where he was number one, I think back in 2013, maybe. But when he was on honeymoon when the news came through, and his agent had promised not to contact him on honeymoon, said she was just going to let them be or whatever. But she did just send him a screenshot of the front of the newspaper with him on it, saying like number one all-time player or whatever, and just said, wow. And he apparently rang her and was like asking, sorry, where's Joe? Where's Jim Brown? Where's, like, basically named about six players that he thought should be ahead of him.
Wow.
And you do get this impression that he's the most just humble, hardworking, genuine guy. The workouts that he did with the guys yesterday apparently went down an absolute storm. And like you said to me at the end there, I'm going to be out there running routes. They better have their A game on because I'm going to be out there bringing it. At 57 years old, he looks absolutely fantastic. And, to be in his kind of presence for an extended period of time was lovely. And, well, it's chatting to Sasha. Hopefully we'll get a bit more of an extended chat, kind of 15, 20 minutes with him at the Super Bowl this year. That's the intention, hopefully, depending on his other commitments. Considering it's the 100th year of the NFL, I imagine he's going to be pretty busy at the Super Bowl. But we're going to try and arrange a proper sit down with him. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that'll be really exciting.
Two things, Willie. Just two things. I think NFL UK had some videos of him running routes and catching passes, and he still looks great. So if you haven't seen that, go over there to Twitter, find it. Did you show him my route for the first touchdown at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
That's out of order.
Like that, is it?
No, it's fine. It's all good. It's all good.
Unbelievable.
I know.
Right, let's talk about let's do a quick wrap through the rest of the stuff. But on the 49ers, so I can't figure out how I feel about this win over the Cardinals last weekend. Obviously, the late scoop and score defensive touchdown makes it look a lot better than it was. The fact is the Cardinals have played us very close twice in 3 weeks and played very well. And Kyler Murray, before we get on to talking about the 49ers side of things, Kyler Murray looks like he's the answer.
He does, like, yeah.
I'm not sure I actually like the offense still. I'm still not sure I'm a fan of Cliff Kingsbury because guys are not getting open in that offense. Christian Kirk had a couple of catches where he didn't have somebody around him, but it's not like the 49ers offense, to use the example of the opposition, where they're scheming guys open so that he can find, Emmanuel Sanders on a crossing route to then pick up an extra 15, 20 yards because he's hitting him in stride and open. It's a lot of throws into very tight windows. If they'd won that game this past weekend, people would be talking about Kyler Murray as an absolute superstar. They didn't win the game because Jimmy Garoppolo took the 49ers on a really good game-winning touchdown drive. And he threw for 424 yards and three touchdowns, and everyone wants to sit here and go, Jimmy Garoppolo, have yourself a day. And that was, there's an element of it where it was a great performance from him. But I am terrified by the interceptions. I know one came off the hands of a receiver, but it was a high throw. And yeah, Jerry Rice talked about the ACL injury. A high throw can, still be part of his mechanical issues because he's still recovering from that. And it's something we've seen him try and force the ball in a lot this season. But he's had 10 picks. He's had eight in 10 games this season. He's had eight games where he's had at least one interception. That's despite the fact that the 49ers have attempted the sixth fewest passes in the NFL of everyone. And you actually look at them, there were a couple of interceptions. Not all of the 10 have been his. Three of them, when you look back on them, have been catchable passes, including that one this weekend and ricocheted to defenders. But of the other seven, none of them have been passes where it's been a a deep shot, gunslinger throw, looking for somebody in tight coverage, and a cornerback makes a great play. They've been much more about him not seeing the field and not seeing guys over the middle and trying to force a throw in where there's not one available and just making a mental error. I think he looks great for about 80-85% of the game right now. And I still believe in him. And people can't forget with Jimmy Garoppolo that he's had less starts than Sam Darnold. Mm. I know he's been in the league longer and he worked with Tom Brady, but you know, because of the injuries and because he was at the Patriots, he is less experienced in terms of minutes on the field and starts than guys who were drafted last year. So there's still a learning curve, and he talks about learning lessons this past weekend. I just look at the next three games and who they're going to be playing against, and we're talking about three teams who are in the top 11. I wish it was top 10 to make it sound better, but who are in the top 11 in terms of interceptions this season. I just have that little bit of fear that with the running game being a little bit weaker recently, we've gone from 181 yards average per game to 72 yards over the last three games. And with the defense having given up points the last 3 weeks in a way that they hadn't been before that, that we're going to have to lean on Garoppolo against the Packers, against New Orleans, and against Baltimore. And that, just those little errors might be the difference between, I think we need one win from those three, probably sees us with a bye. Two wins from those three probably sees us as the number one overall pick, as the number one seed.
Yeah, and you've got to look at what Green Bay have got left. Say you lose to Green Bay, what Green Bay have, they've got to go to Minnesota. They've got a couple of other tough games, whereas the 49ers have also got a tough game. So it's touch and go to see who is going to get the number one and number two seed potentially out of those two.
My hope for Green Bay this weekend from a 49ers perspective, and we'll obviously do a much bigger preview of this game on Friday, is that Green Bay's inability against the run at times this season allows the 49ers run game to get healthy, and Matt Breida being back also will help that in a big way.
Yeah.
That's the kind of fingers crossed of it all, but it's just fingers crossed at the moment.
Charles Woodson said on... Well, no, I think it was Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice said in your interview that Aaron Rodgers always plays well or wants to play well against the 49ers. So that's something that can't be denied. That can't be not thought about, because the Packers coming off a bye will have had a long time to look at this game. They'd have massively studied what Arizona did and off both offense and defense. And the Packers' secondary has got better. Darnell Savage, I'm absolutely loving at the moment as a rookie defensive backfield guy, who's also coming down in forcing pressure and getting the odd sack or two. So this game, what a game to have on TalkSport. I know we're going to preview it better on Friday, but It's absolutely key for both seasons, I think, both 49ers and Packers.
Right, we've only got a couple of minutes left here, so let's just quickly... Are there any other thoughts you had from this past weekend that you just wanted to get out there? I know we're kind of later in the week, so we don't need to do every game.
Yeah, I know you and I wanted to talk about the weird game in Minnesota where the Broncos destroyed the Vikings first half and then the Vikings came back. Kirk Cousins, have you seen the videos of him going around every single department going, we need to play better, with, you know, really geeing up every single player going, come on, let's do this. And he did that at the beginning of the second half, and he came out, and I know there were some defensive issues that allowed people like Kyle Rudolph and Stephon Diggs to get open. Some dreadful defensive issues from the Broncos. And maybe that makes it look better. But Kirk Cousins still has to make those throws. The one to Rudolph, he had to roll out towards his left, set himself, and then throw almost across his body. It's not quite Patrick Mahomesy, but it's a very, very good throw to find Kyle Rudolph in stride. I think they've got a really good player in Irv Smith Jr., who's the natural successor to Rudolph when potentially he goes either this year or next. So I thought the Vikings were really impressive in coming back. That says a lot for a team to come back like that from being down 20 to nothing. I think the previous 99 times that's happened before in the NFL, 99 times the team that was 20-0 down lost. So incredible stuff from Kirk Cousins.
You don't just think that is the correct stat. The previous 99 occasions where a team was losing by 20 points or more at halftime, they were 0-99. Yeah. Cousins is in the midst of a career-best run. Hasn't thrown an interception in 163 pass attempts, the longest streak currently in the NFL. Since week five, he's thrown 18 touchdowns to just one interceptions, which leads him amongst all qualified passers. He's averaging nearly 300 yards a game, 126.5 passer rating, and in that time, the Vikings have gone 6-1, and all of that without Adam Thielen.
Yeah.
I think he's been great over the last 6 or 7 weeks. And yes, they had a bad first half this week against the Broncos. But to come back in that situation and for him to be the leader of that comeback, I'm looking forward to speaking to Matt Sherry later this week and seeing if he's ready to eat his Kirk Cousin words.
But the thing is, next week he could absolutely poop the bed. So there is always that. And Sherry will always have that to come back. But it does look like that he is putting the team back on his shoulders now that Thielen's out, a natural leader for that offense, Thielen, and he's getting responses from players like Diggs, and he did it without Dalvin Cook being particularly good last week. So, yeah, very exciting NFC North-wise, and that game in Minneapolis between Green Bay and the Vikings, I think it's week 16, is going to be an absolute banger as well.
Right, very quickly, the AFC South, the Indianapolis Colts against the Houston Texans. Both teams are 6-4. The Colts have the tiebreaker because of the win earlier this season. They could go into Houston, take the home and home, and be a step away from sealing up the AFC South against a Houston team who got humbled against the Ravens this past weekend. I think this is a barnstormer.
Yeah, absolute banger. You'd expect a response from the Texans, especially, and the Colts are grinding out wins. They're sneakily a little favourite team of mine at the moment because they're doing these things without. They had the turmoil at the beginning of the season with Luck going, and then Brissett going out off injured, coming back, and they've now lost Marlon Mack. But you kind of think when they lose players, the rest of the team rallies and steps up and. They've got a variety of running backs that can come in and fill that void. Really exciting game.
It's bizarre to say, but in the 33-13 win over the Jags, I know Foles had the one interception, but Foles didn't actually play a bad game. The Colts' defense were brilliant. Add to that the fact that without Marlon Mack, with Marlon Mack getting his 109 yards and his touchdown, you still had Jonathan Williams out there, 13 carries, 116 yards. Just the back end of their defense looked really, really good this past weekend. Rokia Sin was really good. Darius Leonard in coverage was really good. I thought they absolutely smothered the Jags receivers, and I quite like them to go. I know it's Thursday night football and my rule is always pick the home team on Thursday night football, but I kind of like them to go into Houston and get the win.
I also want them to go in and into Houston and get the win because I think it's an abomination that they lost that badly to the Ravens, and I don't think they deserve anything out of this season. They've upset me. Look, I've got to go, Willie, but it's been an absolute pleasure. Are you going to be in on Friday? And maybe I'll see you?
We'll figure it out.
I miss you,
UK Gridiron on Instagram, Gridiron on Twitter. Please go rate and do all that good review and do all that good stuff. I don't care. If you listen on an Android, get your laptop. Fire up iTunes, still go and give us a review because like 70% of listeners come through there and it does help us find more listeners. Lots of love, buddy. Have a good one. Thank you for listening. This has been The Gridiron Show.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.